Hello, everyone, and welcome to another week of Trad Tasman Talk. I'm Tim Wilms, Editor-in-Chief of The Unshackled, here in Stage 3.9 Lockdown Melbourne, where we are surrounded by a enforced ring of steel now. So we are officially the new East Berlin, each being Melburnian.
Welcome. It is 8 p.m. here in Auckland. We are still semi-locked down at level 2.5, which means that while we are allowed to leave, no social gatherings of more than 10 people allowed in the city.
It's the rule of 10 you have in Auckland, while the UK has the rule of six. It was repeated by one of their ministers. It's 666.
Yeah,
I don't think he realized what he was saying.
I already predicted this last week, and I'm surprised. Sort of surprised that they didn't really see it coming. But there you go, there you have it.
So regional Victoria was set semi-free yesterday. They're at what we call it maybe stage 2.7 now. So their pubs, restaurants, cafes, and beauty salons, including hairdressers, are allowed to open. The dine-in, though, has to be outside. You're allowed to have visitors to the home, but you have to form the household bubble. So you're allowed up to five visitors from one nominated household, and that has to stay the same. We're becoming familiar with all these terms, bubbles and hubs and whatever.
Communes and you could be like prison cells.
Yes, quarantine facilities.
Exactly. So now that you have access to barbers again, you have...
No, Melburnians don't. I'm talking, as a Melburnian, no. Haircuts are still very much illegal. It's actually been widely reported now, the black market for haircuts.
I can imagine. Yeah. You could make good money if you'd gone into the right career path there.
Well, there was speculation last week that Daniel Andrews had had a haircut. He denied that. Jobs Minister Martin McCullough, when he appeared this week, his hair was notably shorter. He said it was all above board. My wife just did a clipper job on me.
Very good. I find that believable. I mean, that's who does my hair. So nobody, I usually feel like, oh, very nice haircut. Well, you know, you have a good barber. Yes, I do. Thank you.
The Melbourne lockdown, it's described worldwide now as one of the world's most strict, draconian, and longest, though obviously a lot of people have short-term memories, forgetting how even more draconian New Zealand's initial alert level 4 lockdown was, where KFC was even shut, and...
That's right. Yep. Absolutely. Absolutely nothing. Mm.
And imagine my shock. It's come back to bite New Zealand.
Mm-hmm. It has been. Yep. Absolutely. Yeah. Well, the GDP numbers for the past quarter have shrunk by 12.2%. And they've said the economy has shrunk by 12.2%. But that's not counting. This is also... including government spending in the overall economy. So all of the borrowing, all of the wage subsidies, all of this money that's being thrown at every single problem factored in, the economy has still shrunk by 12.2% after all of that spending. And with the wage subsidy still in effect as well, it's entirely possible we can see a whole lot more damage once the zombie businesses go down, which we've been saying for the past 3 or 4 months. That may still be extended, but eventually the zombie businesses will come down.
Our GDP during the June quarter only fell by 7%, but obviously everyone is expecting the next quarter to be worse, with Victoria's stage 4 lockdown obviously having much more industry restrictions, though there was some surprisingly, I wouldn't say, I'd say less bad news with Australia's unemployment figures for the month of August. I'll just bring them up now. I've got so many tabs open at the moment.
I can imagine. It's actually interesting with the New Zealand drop. It's apparently not as great as forecast. So they've been advertising, oh, it's not as bad. It's not as bad as it could have been. It's not as bad as it was predicted. But as I said, I very much suspect that the worst is still coming.
Definitely. And well, we're still shut down here in Melbourne. We will be for at least another 5 weeks. October 26th is the date if our 14-day rolling average is 5 daily cases, which seems like an impossible feat to get to. We'll only get the same relaxation in restrictions that regional Victorians are enjoying now. But with the regional Victorian restrictions, I should note that you're now allowed to leave your house for any reason now. So if you're a regional Victorian, then you can come and go as you please. You know, you don't need a lawful reason to be out. So they've got that freedom back. Melburnians aren't scheduled to get that freedom until October 26. Our 14-day daily average is in metropolitan Melbourne is 42.5. It's under the 50-case threshold to trigger stage 3.8 on September 28th. But yes, I found the document now. So this our unemployment rate nationwide actually fell from 7.5% in July to 6.8% in August. This is according to labour force data from the Australian Bureau of Statistics. But if you go further down to the state-by-state breakdown, Victoria's unemployment rate increased with the state in stage 4 lockdown from 6.8% to 7.1% a month later. Imagine my shock.
Imagine.
Tasmania recorded a 0.3% rise in unemployment to 6% in August. Tasmania is still got its hard border up. It's obviously easier to maintain since it's an island and not many people live there. And Queensland, the state with the highest unemployment rate in July, saw a 1.3% decrease in the measure to 7.5% in August. Josh Frydenberg, the federal treasurer, he wasn't keen to spruik these numbers too much, given that, well, we have JobKeeper continuing until March next year, though on September 28th, the fortnightly, the weekly payment is cut from $750 to $600. So it is being scaled back, and then there's another cut that happens in January.
At some point, you're out of money, right? That's the old line from Margaret Thatcher.
Oh, no, you can just print it. Here's maybe a future Australian currency here, $1 million note.
Oh, excellent. I can... you can all be millionaires.
Yes,
Like we'll be in New Zealand. And it's the same thing there. They're projecting low unemployment, low unemployment in New Zealand, like 6% to 8%. And they're expecting that to last for at least 5 years. Partially, obviously, they haven't factored in the fact that they're still stomping on everybody's necks.
And how is that the announcement of the GDP contraction? Has it had any impact on the election campaign, on the polls?
It's hard to tell because there's no polling being done.
How convenient.
It may give the game away. I've got some leaked poll numbers somewhere. I'm not sure if I can bring them up in time for the show. But basically, some leaked internal polling is showing that the gap is closed to about 10%. Labor still up in about 43-44%, and sort of National behind in getting to the high 30s now. That's I suspect, at least if the league polls are accurate, that the gap is tightening, which obviously goes against the narrative. And the reason why you may be inclined to believe the league numbers are that the fact that there are no official polls being done, that is the clue.
That seems so strange during a general election where it's going back to Australia's federal election in May 2019. There were so many polls on all different sorts of things. I think news poll came out every week, but of course, as we found out on election night, the polls were wrong.
Exactly.
But at least there was polling taking place.
yeah, that's right. And they tend to be quite predictive in New Zealand. So if they can release polls showing certain figures, they're fairly likely to get the outcomes there. And polling can work in favor of certain parties. It can work against others. So it's interesting to see what they can do with, what they do with the polling. But the fact they aren't doing any is incredibly strange. And there probably needs to be one on schedule sometime this week or next week. And if they're not doing any more polling, this could be the last poll, because they've done one a month or less than one a month for the past year or two, which I think is quite bizarre for an industry that seems to enjoy polling very often.
And you can do it contactless polling. Let's remember that you don't actually have to go up to people to poll them.
Yeah. So
that's another new buzzword of 2020, contactless.
Yes, exactly. Cheers to everybody in the chat, by the way. I've seen some chats slide by, people with their Friday night drinks, of course, and the usual few people in the chat who wait for me to drink before taking a sip. So it's sort of like a drinking game, but I'll try and drink often this show.
I've just got my Coke with me. As always, we're on the Unshackled and Right Minds YouTube channel, and also on the YouTube enhanced software Entropy, where both of us are putting the link to Entropy. That's where you can ask us a question or send through a super chat, because as part of the rejig or whatever you want to call it of the show, we've got a Q&A section at the end.
Yes, that's right. We will. And I just see a question here. I can ask, what am I drinking? Gin. Yeah, back on the gin. And I did see some people talk about port earlier. I do have a nice Australian tawny in my cupboard as well, but it's for a special occasion. And tonight's just a normal night.
At least in your alert level 4 lockdown, I have to use the correct term, because we in Victoria call it stages. It's alert level.
We're at stage 3 cancer level. Yeah.
the liquor stores were still open.
Mm-hmm. But no, at level 4, only if you lived in an area that's under draconian licensing trust laws could you get alcohol delivered. Otherwise, you could only get the stuff they were selling at the supermarket. So you could only get supermarket wine, supermarket beer, unless you lived out in basically West Auckland and possibly one or two other parts of the country. Special monopolies that have monopolies on selling liquor. So supermarkets aren't allowed to sell liquor. Nobody's allowed to sell liquor except for these licensed monopolies in certain parts of New Zealand. So, and obviously they were essential during level 4.
Most of our supermarkets have a separate liquor department attached to them. Woolworths has BWS, Coles has Liquorland, and then both those chains have their liquor warehouses, which is First Choice Liquor and Dan Murphy's. Dan Murphy's is probably more popular than Dan Andrews at the moment, because that's when Dan delivers you cases, that's much better than Dan Andrews announcing delivering coronavirus cases.
Yeah, exactly. Corona beer, not coronavirus.
Exactly. But all the pubs that have shut, they are still allowed to operate their drive-through liquor, whether that be Thirsty Camel or whatever. So your alert level 4 shutdown, it benefited the major chains much more than the little guys.
Yeah, and that was it. So if you're a monopoly, if you're a supermarket monopoly, you're a liquor monopoly, you are allowed to function, obviously. Yes, very, very essential.
Because that's what social justice is.
Absolutely. Mm. So, yeah. Well, that's in terms of other economic numbers in New Zealand. The houses are selling. House market keeps going up through the roof. Obviously, nothing has changed in terms of building restrictions in New Zealand. So it's still difficult to build houses. Expensive to build houses. all of the land restrictions and infrastructure problems that we have around getting more housing is there. But with the country having been shut down for 2 months earlier this year means that there aren't a lot of extra houses. And then with no tourists being here, but instead having, you know, returning residents, returning citizens, everybody wants a house. Everybody needs a house. So if you're in the housing business, then things are booming for you at the moment.
Well, everyone's predicting, well, not just in Victoria, but Australia-wide, there's going to be a trend to go bush, because obviously being in an inner city apartment during the lockdowns is the worst place to be, especially, well, we still have the exercise limit and 5 kilometer radius here in Melbourne. And obviously, being in a apartment complex or a dense area, there's more chance of clusters emerging. Where if you've got some acreage or manor in rural or regional Victoria, you're less likely to get whatever the next virus is going to be, and also less likely to have nosy neighbors who are going to be tut-tutting.
And when you're inevitably locked back into your own properties, if you've got more space, you've got more land, you're out in more rural areas. You've got more fresh air, that's right. And you know, if you're going to be hit by the second Great Depression, if you've got more land, people are more interested in growing their own food, doing more gardening, we're talking about getting chickens here, so who knows, might get into a little bit of urban farming in my backyard, who knows. So it's a case of people wanting more rural lifestyles, and people out on the island properties here in Auckland, especially Waiheke, one of the Auckland islands, houses there are just, they're selling as soon as they come on the market. And they are, you know, obviously nice and secluded, big space, and especially the wealthier people are keen to get out. And I suspect people who are not as wealthy, if you're going to take on debt with the interest rates heading negative, there's that incentive to get people into debt and people taking on more debt. But if you can do it smartly, it also is an opportunity to pay off debt more quickly. So people who are stuck in debt, basically now is your chance to get rid of it, because the rates are just going down.
Sounds like that's New Zealand's own Nantucket and Martha's Vineyard.
Yeah, that's essentially what it is. Yeah, Martha's Vineyard is at least the one I'm more familiar with. But is Nantucket an Australian or
no American island? Is it also American? Off the coast of Massachusetts?
Ah, right. I the name sounds very familiar, but yeah, certainly that's what it is. Yeah.
Well, it's going to be interesting. If all the state borders apart from Western Australia open by Christmas, as has been agreed by National Cabinet, whether there is going to be these carloads of Victorians fleeing to other states. We had Powerball $60 million jackpot last night, which was actually won by a Sydneysider. If it was won by a Melburnian, they could certainly afford to buy themselves a ticket to anywhere else.
And you would.
Well, as the Chief Health Officer of Queensland, Dr. Jeanette Young, said, if the price is right, you'll be let in.
That's right. Good.
Yeah, I saw that one of the Sky News contributors, Kirsty McSweeney, her PR counsel firm, she'd been basing herself in Melbourne, even though she's a Perth native. She'd been trying to get a entry permit to WA for months. She finally got it because she was on the Sky News front page last night from hotel quarantine in Perth. So she escaped.
And how are the rest of your borders in Australia looking? We do need our weekly border dispute update.
Well, we had another National Cabinet meeting today. Now, obviously, been focusing on the heartless and cruel border closure between New South Wales and Queensland, but all of the state border closures are causing a lot of grievances, anxiety, and separation. But now another problem has emerged, and that is a lot of Australians are stranded overseas because of the caps on international arrivals. Australia as a whole is still a lot like North Korea and Cuba in that you can't leave.
Can't leave.
Under the Biosecurity Act, the ban on leaving Australia has been extended until mid-December, but even if you are an Australian, it's difficult for you to get back home, whether you can get a flight or whether you'll be allowed back in. And it basically all stems to, well, the Victoria second wave being traced to the outbreak in hotel quarantine, which has spooked all the other states and territories that they might have a similar outbreak there, which could cause a second wave in their state. But there was some progress at National Cabinet today. So New South Wales will take an extra 500 overseas
refugees.
Yeah. Oh no, Australians. Australians.
Australian refugees. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, they're coming back to Australia, but given that you can't leave Australia now, like, this is the thing. You wonder, like, obviously the impact on Victoria's economic and human rights reputation is going to be bad, but what about Australia as a whole, given that we're indicating we're shut for business? So extra 500 can come back from September 27th. Queensland and WA is taking extra 200 Australians returning from overseas from September 27th. Queensland to lift its intake by a further 300 from October 4th, with WA moving to the same position on October 11th. Extra Defence Force personnel will help the states run hotel quarantine, which of course didn't happen in Victoria. Mandatory collection of information such as name, email, mobile phone number, and state of residence to be rolled out for domestic air travel passengers from October 1. Boarding school students will be able to come home for the school holidays under new medical advice. Rural and regional subcommittee was tasked to work on a jobs plan. Next National Cabinet meeting is due to be held on October 16th after the federal budget, which I think will be much more grim than what the jobs numbers were for August.
Mm-hmm. And we have been told, along with our budget numbers, that the borders are going to be staying closed until 2021. So they've already predicted that next year will be largely one where leaving the country and coming into the country will be incredibly difficult.
Has New Zealand had a similar problem with its citizens stranded overseas? How?
Not so much. Apparently, we've never quite hit capacity in terms of taking people back. The strange thing seems to be that we're learning that we have a very large number of residents and citizens that live in India and Afghanistan and Pakistan and, you know, various other stands that you've never heard of. And they're all returning. All New Zealanders are returning back to New Zealand now.
Well, at least you've got that worked out,
it seems to be working smoothly for that for what it's worth. But that's where most of the because they report the country of origin when you get a cases in quarantine facilities, and they all tend to be from that part of the world.
Well, we had some progress on borders reopening. South Australia and Queensland are going to open their borders to residents of the Australian Capital Territory, given that it has been coronavirus-free for over 2 months now. And you remember that girl who couldn't attend the funeral while she was allowed to have a private alone viewing in a full hazmat suit.
We had that story last week.
Yes, she was from the ACT. Which,
in fact, I believe that headline, now that I remember, is where we've sort of taken the title from this week's show from.
Yes, the Daily Mail headline. I don't think they've IP'd that yet.
We're applying it to the economy here, so we're fair use.
Now it's changed now. So the ACT is no longer a COVID hotspot, but the geography of Australia is the Australian Capital Territory is an enclave around New South Wales, which South Australia and Queensland designate a hotspot. And obviously, if you drive to Queensland or South Australia from the ACT, you'll be going through New South Wales. So you'd be going through a hotspot. So you'll have
to issue like a do not stop, do not open your doors notice, like they have at these wildlife parks when you go into the wildlife park. You know, it's like under no circumstances leave your vehicle.
It'd be like there's a radioactive nuclear material in the air if you open your car window on the way from the ACT to Queensland through New South Wales. There might be still some pathogens in the air. Yeah. So the only way to get to South Australia or Queensland from the ACT is through air. So the ACT is basically the new West Berlin with the Berlin airlift. People who are students of history will know that after the Soviets blocked off access to West Berlin with the Berlin blockade in 1948, the Western Allies had this genius way of overcoming it by flying supplies into West Berlin. ACT will be connected to the rest of non-hotspotted Australia now by air through the ACT airlift.
Yes, the biggest downside being is that if you try to escape East Berlin, they will. It's the West Berliners that will shoot you when you try and cross the border.
Yeah, because the thing about East Berlin is that if you escape to West Berlin or Western Germany, you were welcomed. But the Melburnians, they're not welcome anywhere. we're still high risk of passing on coronavirus.
Mm-hmm. And we actually are getting instances now of shops in the South Island putting up signs saying no Aucklanders and Aucklanders not welcome. So Aucklanders are somewhat of a pariah and in the rest of the country. And in a sense, we always have been. They have wonderful nicknames for Aucklanders in the further down south you go.
Do you have a ring of steel around Auckland?
No. So you're free to come and go as you please, but you you need to act like you have the virus. You must social distance, not attend meetings. That is, unless you are the Prime Minister. And I should have sent you this photo before the show, but I'm just going to demonstrate for you exactly how seriously the Prime Minister is taking the advice that she has given. And I will find this and send it to you in a minute.
Well, even Scott Morrison has been told by the Queensland Premier Anastasia Palaszczuk, who now a lot of people are now pronouncing Palaszczuk, using that more crass pronunciation. If Scott Morrison goes to Queensland to campaign for the Liberal National Party in the state election, which is on October 31st, he'll have to do 2 weeks of mandatory hotel quarantine. He's the Prime Minister of Australia, though he can't travel freely around the nation. Anastasia Palaszczuk this week, she declared that she'd be prepared to lose the election if it meant keeping Queenslanders safe with hard borders. And that was sort of jaw-dropping moment, like, because you never hear a politician say that. And if they do say it, they're probably projecting. But the residents of Queensland will have the chance to pass judgment on Anastasia Palaszczuk's a border policies and management of the coronavirus on Saturday, the October 31st. Us in Victoria, next scheduled state election is November 26th, 2022.
I'd say, well, you've got, you know, a couple of years to get this under control. I'm sure you'll be fine.
Obviously, I think last week I told you about how Melbourne or the state of Victoria was still using post-it notes and fax machines to contact trace. I noticed that even the lefty satire sites now are now mocking the Andrews government. The Shovel, which is normally a left-wing satire website, said Victoria doubles contact tracing capacity with the purchase of a second fax machine.
I've put the I've sent you the link there. If you can see it and click on it, or you can bring that selfie up. So that was the Prime Minister yesterday, with her fans at Massey University in Palmerston North.
Oh wow!
So as you can
yeah.
see there, there's some good social distancing going on there, and the entire country, mind you, is under level 2 lockdown. So you have to stay 2 meters away from everyone. Even if you're in the middle of the South Island, or you're somewhere on, you know, say Stewart Island, you're out somewhere out in the middle of nowhere, you're still under level 2 restrictions. And especially, you've been told, if you're an Aucklander traveling elsewhere. And that's what she is, an Aucklander.
But she does, she doesn't handshake anymore, though. She does the elbow. So that's COVID safe greeting.
Exactly. And of course, people asking here, I see the second lockdown as well. What was the point of the second lockdown? Well, the point of the second lockdown is that in New Zealand's largest city, you can't campaign 2 weeks away from an election. So that's, you know, if I were cynical, that's what I would say.
Well, we have our local government elections proceeding in October as scheduled. I had Liberal councillor for the city of Greater Dandenong, Timothy Dark, on my show, Wilmsfront Show, Wednesday night. He's the sole Liberal on the Dandenong council. Mm-hmm. There's 9 Labour and 1 Green. But as I've reported on this show, Dandenong is one of the areas which has experienced a revolt against the lockdown led by the local Muslim community. So I asked him about could that see a change in voting demographics, but local government elections they're conducted by mail-in voting in Victoria.
Here in Auckland, all of New Zealand as well.
Obviously you're the same as our state and federal elections. New Zealand general election is done by in attendance voting.
That's right. You have to turn up unless you've specifically requested an absentee ballot for a valid reason. We do have early voting starting in about 2 weeks, in basically 2 weeks tomorrow, and then early voting goes on for 2 weeks until election day itself.
And you don't have the how to vote card people in New Zealand elections.
No, I've actually had a little bit of talk with New Conservative, and I've seen that in New Conservative circles a little bit more about for instance, a how to vote card, because we do have to referenda this election. So you have to vote on the end of life choice bill, which is legalized euthanasia.
Even though you've all been locked down to save old people's lives.
Yeah, we'll be saving old people, but now we can have the state execute old people with their consent, of course. Consent is very important. And then the other one is the cannabis legalization and control bill from the Green Party. So we can have legal
I've just
weed.
Made this a $1 million Australian bill into
yeah,
makeshift
you can smoke
joint.
It. Yeah, that's going to be it. So if you're sick of the lockdowns, I don't know.
Is it full legal marijuana?
It's full legal marijuana.
Yeah.
Control. The word control is in there and important, obviously, because there are tons of restrictions and you've got to meet criteria. But if you're in the right business, you have the right connections, you can set up a shop and make good money. But you can grow it yourself, and you can even give it away, which makes it looser than alcohol. Cigarettes, tobacco, because you are allowed to grow tobacco in New Zealand as well. But you're technically or legally not allowed to share it. But you will be allowed to share cannabis with people.
So the slogan should be for the pro marijuana campaigners is that if we have to go back to another lockdown post the election, marijuana will get you through it, and
euthanasia will finish you off.
Although during a future lockdown, it would actually be technically medical marijuana to get you through it. Because
you can already get the medical marijuana, by the way. It's not looking like the cannabis legalization will actually pass. The polling on that is pretty 50-50. So assisted dying seems to be something people are very much in favor of, but people are not so much in favor of getting stoned.
Although getting stoned, it makes you stay at home more and more often.
Well, that's what you think that would be a good way to, you know, they could use to promote it as well. But we shall see. So there is obviously, you know, there's a little bit more to vote on this time. And you get two votes as well. So you get your list vote, you get your electorate vote, and then you get your cannabis vote and your assisted suicide vote as well. So those are going to be four votes. It's going to be quite a complicated election for people to navigate.
Well, that's nothing compared to the US elections, where you vote for not just for the president this November, vote for Congress, and there's a lot of statewide ballots and district attorney, or what is it, fire commissioner or something, garbage commissioner or something. You vote for everything.
Sheriff is the important one.
Yeah, sounds like you cast 100 votes every November in the US. But
much rather that, actually. I do wish we could actually vote for more things. You know, we basically live in a country run by bureaucrats, so it doesn't matter who you vote for, you get the same result anyway, basically. That's the way things are.
The only extra special vote we've got in Australia recently was the marriage law postal survey back in 2017, which of course was the trigger to legalize same-sex marriage in Australia, but it's doesn't mean much in Melbourne now, with it still being illegal to get married unless it's for compassionate grounds. So the marriage equality in Melbourne at the moment is nobody can get married.
Yes, absolutely. That's
Going back to these photos of Jacinta, even though she is an Aucklander, where's her, was that homemade mask, which I reckon looked like some undies?
Yeah. Yes, the undies. They've given up on that now, actually. I don't know why. They were kind of in vogue for a week. They probably did focus groups and stuff, right? So they probably like focus grouped it and did some A/B testing on like, do people like Jacinda with the mask and without the mask? And they probably registered like that, like her. She probably lost like 1 or 2% in the polls because of wearing a mask, and so they decided to ditch it this week. And I'm only 50% cynical here.
Obviously, we're still in Melbourne, and to a degree in regional Victoria, living under the decrees by dictator Dan Andrews. And now the nickname Dictator Dan has gone global. This was featured in the Washington Post. Australia's coronavirus dictator enforces a drastic lockdown, but he's still popular.
Can you scroll back up a little bit? I haven't seen those.
Oh yeah, this is the COVID safe Victorian Legislative Assembly. So got the looks like the Get Smart cone of silence. even though there's you've got the they're called the I can't remember the name, the plastic shields or whatever you want to call them, but even though that protects a droplets, you still got to wear that's the opposition leader Michael O'Brien opposite him in the mask there, so he's got just the
take
mask
it off if you speak, is that the idea?
Yeah,
you or does Dan not have to wear it?
Oh no, you're allowed to take it off when you speak. So Dan Andrews, during his daily press conferences, he obviously takes it off to speak, and journalists doing live crosses from Melbourne streets are allowed to not wear a mask while they're speaking. So detractors call him Dictator Dan. Supporters declare on social media, "I stand with Dan." To residents of Melbourne, Australia, Australia's second largest city, he is Dan Andrews, the Premier. The politician responsible for inflicting some of the most stringent pandemic measures on earth. The city repeatedly named the world's most livable city has been locked down since July 9. A week ago, Andrews declared that a citywide curfew will not be lifted until October 26, and then only if coronavirus is almost eliminated. And just to give some perspective here, the Washington Post is not a far-right news outlet. It is probably one of the most Trump-deranged news outlets in the United States, and they were also forced to pay Nicholas Sandman, the Covington High School MAGA boy, $250 million, I should say, in damages for defaming him as a racist.
I've just remembered that we've moved on from East and West Berlin, but I suppose before we're completely done with situation there in Australia, we have had Auckland today cut in half. So we have a North and South Auckland separated because a truck crashed on the harbour bridge. We only have one harbour crossing at the moment, although there is a long way around if you take the land route. So they reckon that...
Oh, what's happened? Where you are there, your mic.
Is my mic gone?
It sounds like your mic is having a thunderstorm.
Hold on. I didn't do anything.
Yeah, sounds okay now. Better.
All right, there we go. Carry on.
This reminds me of when, the Tasman Bridge in Hobart divided the city across the Derwent River in 1975. Oh, I think I know what it is. That's the stupid autoplay on stuff. But I should just point out with Melbourne's Ring of Steel, Victoria Police told us it was being reinforced on Wednesday, and they introduced a new fine for those leaving a restricted area into Melbourne of $4,957 because Dan Andrews has he hasn't seen a new fine that he hasn't liked. but on Thursday morning, when regional Victoria was reopening, the checkpoint at Little River, which is in between Melbourne and Geelong, was unmanned because it was raining. So per police state, the Victorian police state can't function if it rains.
If it rained in the rain, yeah, very good. The fines are really important, Tim, because... the government spending contributes towards GDP, so he can save Melbourne's economy by fining people and then spending the money.
It's actually, if you do the actual number crunching, given what the Victorian government is spending on this coronavirus response, it's a lot more than the, I think, about $26 million they've raised in coronavirus fines. Which, of course, a lot of people have speculated when a lot of these fines are challenged, are they going to hold up in court? Because there is now a legal challenge to Melbourne's curfew by a Mornington Peninsula restaurant owner. And a lot of the fines have been issued to those breaching curfew, a lot of them ducking out to servos to get some cigarettes because they found out that they haven't got any. And you know how cigarette smokers, they need their fix. The Supreme Court of Victoria wants to hear the case as a matter of urgency. If it's thrown out, the curfew, because we now know it wasn't based on medical advice, it wasn't based on police advice. Dan Andrews himself said, I can't remember who came up with the idea, but it's something that I decided, which basically, if he didn't base this on medical or police advice, then what else has he based on just his dictatorial decree and not through? Because the way the Public Health and Wellbeing Acts, it's got to be based on the Chief Health Officer's directions. But if it's not something the Chief Health Officer recommended, then there's a good question if it's lawful.
And then it should be unlawful, yeah, absolutely.
If it's found invalid, the curfew, then all those fines get knocked out, at least the ones after curfew.
Well, that would be good. I hope so. Mm. Somebody in the chat here is asking the obvious question: why should the bridge be shut for weeks? Back to the Auckland Bridge. That's indeed a very good question. But this is Auckland Transport and the New Zealand Transport Agency we're talking about. So it'll take them at least until the weekend. It's been today now, so it'll be tomorrow at least, I suppose, at the earliest, that they will be able to assess the damage, and then it may take them. They said several weeks to make appropriate repairs to the middle of the bridge, in which case they are recommending that people stay home or find, work from home or find alternative routes. They got to get, 50 managers on the job, and then they've got to find, one guy who will, bend the barrier back into place and whatever. It is pretty much a joke. You think that in a large city of over a million people that you'd be able to get keep the main bridge that connects two halves of the city running, but not anymore.
Well, after the Tasman Bridge the whole bridge wasn't knocked down, just the middle of it, which obviously meant that people couldn't cross it because when it happened the boat made the middle bit collapsed, a few people died driving off the edge. That was the only bridge in Hobart during that time. And so obviously after that, they made two other bridges.
Yeah.
So that happened again.
Yeah. you think that somebody would build a second bridge here in Auckland, but we don't really think that far ahead. That's not really, those are not really the things that the council or the central government really thinks about at the moment. Yeah. Because re-election in every 3 years is the most important thing, and it takes longer than that to build a bridge with all of the resource consents that are required.
I hate to point this out, but it's better that I point this out to you than maybe someone else. The middle of your beard, just before your nose, it's quite black compared to the rest of your beard, if you get what I mean.
Sorry.
This part of your beard here. It's very jet black. Probably. Jet black, yes, but it looks like, you get what I mean?
I might get what you're getting at. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so
I need to turn the light up, that's all.
We'll be fine. Unfortunate bit of lighting.
Don't worry, guys, it's just the lighting.
Yes. You didn't dye that particular section of your beard like that.
No. I would never do such a thing.
We've had our first whistleblower, if you can call him that, in the Victorian government, speaking out against the Victorian government's coronavirus response or handling. This Sanjeev Sabalok, he was a Victorian Treasury economist. He quit so he could speak out against policy blunders, and he's now joined the Give Dan the Boot campaign, which is you take a photo of your boots outside your property and post it online to show it's one of the lawful forms of protest. To take a photo of your boots at your front door to show that you're giving Dan the Boot. He's become quite active on Twitter now. This was in the Australian Financial Review and Opinion column. He was on Credlin on Sky News last night. So it's good to see somebody sort of taking, willing to give up a generous public service salary on principle. Doesn't happen much these days.
Certainly doesn't, no. And I should notice for people, I should mention that we are in the last 10, 15 minutes of the show. If you've got questions or super chats, please send them through. And I'll let Tim continue, but we'll try and answer a question or two before we get to the end as well.
Yeah, I keep putting the entropy link in the chat. Now, obviously, they've been talking about Dictator Dan quite a bit, but there's also been a lot of alarm and concern about how Victoria Police enforcing Dan's directives. Obviously, a lot of the world was quite disturbed by the arrest of a pregnant woman, Zoe Buller, for incitement, for wanting to organise a protest against the lockdown in her town of Ballarat, which at the time was under stage three restrictions. Now, in the latest, because the Victorian Parliament is sitting this week, it seems to only Dan Andrews only seems to wants it to sit so he can pass more emergency powers. The omnibus emergency measures bill, anything which has in the bill
word
title,
omnibus in
or emergency measures.
That's right. These are three words you don't want to see together.
Mm. There is, I'll link you to, this is how Gideon Rosner from the Institute of Public Affairs, whose daily podcast IPA with you has gained a substantial following. This is how he described it, Dictator Dan trying to build COVID gulag. And in this bill, which is before the parliament, allows any authorised officers during the coronavirus pandemic, so it can be police or health officials, any bureaucrat, to detain people without trial for being high risk spreaders, which this can include conspiracy theorists and anti-lockdown protesters, and it's for an indefinite, it can be for indefinite period of time.
There's no
oversight, and this is what Gideon Rosner said. We all talk about Dictator Dan. He is literally trying to build a COVID gulag here, Mr. Rosner told Sky News host Andrew Bright. This is dystopian, outlandish stuff. And it's pretty much like this sort of, that this is being proposed by a far left socialist government that, they never really cared about human rights. Well, Daniel Andrews admitted that it's about human life. Human rights aren't the first consideration, and that if people just complied, then everything would be a lot easier.
That's right. Now, who needs human rights when you can have compliance?
Yeah, and human life is given that Dan Andrews helped pass abortion and euthanasia, obviously...
You're saving people's lives is really important. Yeah.
But
I've got some comments. I'll let you wrap it up.
Yeah. Quality of life is obviously not a consideration as well. And it's for those...
So happy for you to die alone. No funerals. People spend their last days isolated, restricted in visitors, have to see everybody, through masks and unable to properly interact with other people. That's definitely incredibly compassionate.
Given that the daily case numbers seem to be improving, it was 28 yesterday, though it did jump to 45 today, there is a new cluster in Melbourne's safe southeast called the Casey cluster. Residents in Melbourne's southeast who visited other households in breach of stage four lockdown restrictions have driven a COVID-19 cluster in the area that has spread to 34 people. A former department secretary who is now responsible for the state's testing strategy, Jerome Weimer, said the spread across five households in Casey and Dandenong council areas. One of the reasons why the current restrictions ask us not to have households communicating with each other or contacting each other or sharing each other over this current phase of restrictions, I think you could just say visiting each other. because what is that? Communicating and contact can also take place virtually, which is COVID safe. It's because of the inherent risks about that kind of contact and around close contact between different houses. And this is what's been playing out within Casey. Mr. Weimar said, painstaking contact tracing had now found there were 5 households across Callum, Clyde, Narre Warren South and Cranbourne North generated 34 coronavirus cases first identified on September 4. What we've seen is obviously some normal travel, and we'll expect people to conduct in order to get the necessary things for life. And we've certainly seen traveling and shopping centres and storage largely within the 5 kilometre radius. But we've also seen this particular cluster visiting houses beyond the 5 kilometre radius. So 5 houses in particular clusters have unfortunately had some members of those households visiting households. I won't read the rest of it, but they said, we've had a series of deep and ongoing conversations with community members and leaders across the wider Casey and Dandenong areas. And when they say community members and leaders, you can sort of encrypt that to, or decrypt that to know that it's an outbreak in a multicultural community. Yeah. And of course, it gave Daniel Andrews an opportunity to blame other people for spreading the virus, and therefore deflecting blame from himself about the hotel quarantine breaches and poor contract tracing. Visiting others is the real issue here. Frankly, the rules are in place for a reason. The rules are in place for a reason, and anyone who undermines this undermines the entire strategy. If you break the rules, particularly if you're breaking the rules in your home or somebody else's home where there is no infection control, there is no formality, it is by its very nature close contact for potentially prolonged periods. All you'll do is spread the virus. And can't rule out that there'll be additional cases beyond 34, but still encourage people to come forward to get tested. There's new pop-up clinics there. He says that is how you keep it to 34 and do not see things spread to 3. So this is a test of their new contact tracing computerized system, because there were no new cases with this cluster today, whether their contact tracing has improved, whether they can keep this cluster under control, or is this the beginning of a, well, third wave?
We actually, interestingly, have had a situation here in the last day or two in Auckland where it was announced that on Wednesday that they had made a little mistake. Previously that this Monday, a girl that went to a school, Chapel Downs Primary School here in South Auckland, just down the road from where I am, had a girl was sent to school in the morning, and then her parents got the call 9 minutes after they dropped her off saying that she had tested positive for COVID-19, and they had to go back and pick her up and isolate her. The test had been processed over the weekend. And they ended up, no real push for isolation, I suspect there was no real symptoms there. But so now they've had to shut down the entire school, ask everyone, from that school to get tested, ask all the families to get tested, and on it goes. So we don't know if the saga here is over, but we're down to, we have basically no cases. We're down to 37 community cases. We have no cases today, yesterday, one the day before. We shall see if we are, if the second lockdown is complete, and then we'll get a month or two of respite before we can move into the third lockdown. So that may be possible.
Because if the polls that have been recorded to date still have Jacinta far out in head, if she's got another 3 years of government ahead of her, then, she's already passed the New Zealand's emergency measures, so obviously after the election she'd have all the political capital and time to put in another alert level 4
exactly.
Lockdown.
They could keep doing this, keep doing it for as long as they like. We've got a super chat here that I should read out and answer from Bang Arang, $10. Do New Conservative have a candidate for the Māori electorate of Te Tai
You're supposed to be able to know all these
I'm
Maori
supposed
names.
to be good at this. I don't know this one. I don't even want to attempt it. You get in trouble if you say it bad. If you mispronounce names here,
I'll just mispronounce it.
Give a beating. How Auru? First time enrolling. I want to make sure I represent correctly. The New Conservative actually has announced today that they are one of only two parties that are standing a candidate in every single electorate. That includes all of the Maori electorates as well. So we have a candidate in that electorate. I'm afraid I can't tell you who it is because I don't know. Some of them haven't been fully announced yet, but we do have confirmed candidates submitted to the Electoral Commission in every single electorate. So no matter where you live, you will be able to vote for a New Conservative. We've also released the list today. I am number 9 on the list. So that means that if we get about 7.5% of the vote, I'll be in Parliament. Mm. So that's another incentive for you to vote New Conservative as well.
Though most likely New Conservative won't get that vote.
Thanks, for that vote of confidence right there.
I hope you get that vote, but I'm not hopeful.
We shall see. Certainly, if you believe the polls, it's not very likely. But we'll keep trying. We'll keep at it. Keep campaigning.
So we are into overtime now, but we will answer any more of your questions on Entropy. I'll put the link in again. So Savage and Nobles and Merry Peasants has said, this is to both of us, who are the most dangerous, noteworthy pushers of socialism in Australia and New Zealand? Well, New South Wales Greens, I would say, in Australia with David Shoebridge, our Antifa hitman. Lucas Roses has done heaps of exposés on the New South Wales Greens and how they've spoken at all these Marxist socialist alternative events. And obviously, there's a reasonable Antifa presence in New Zealand who, they've said a few things about you, untrue
yes,
things.
Absolutely. I think the Antifa groups are not necessarily that dangerous or noteworthy, but they can be, and that's, you know, as a whole, but they can be individually very dangerous, right? They can, attack people personally. They try and go for your, for jobs. They'll try and get the police to come after you. They'll try and do all kinds of nasty things. So they can, those groups can definitely be very, very dangerous. But in terms of who actually holds power in New Zealand, it's probably especially the academics, university academics, and they work closely with the media as well. We have a number of journalists who are basically communists not like me calling them communists, but actually have previously written for communist newspapers, have been members of communist organizations. And on the Right Minds website, and I'm going to paste it in the chat if Oregon has not beaten me to it, but he's actually written an essay on the nepotism of New Zealand's political far left on the website. And I'm just dropping that in the chat. I'm going to drop it in both of the chats. And he goes through all of the different groups and all of the different characters involved behind the scenes here in New Zealand.
Thankfully, the Victorian Greens, even though they voted for the state of emergency extension powers, are opposing Dictator Dan's preventative indefinite detention bill. Given that they voted against such legislation in the War on Terror era, they should, by principle, vote against this as well. And also Liberty Victoria, which is chaired by Julian Burnside, a QC, former Greens candidate himself. After last week, he said he didn't mind mobile police surveillance vehicles. He's now written to express his organization's opposition to this detention bill.
Good.
Mm-hmm. So last chance for any more questions. I'm just getting, because it's beginning to be dawn in the UK, there's rumors now of in the UK, of a 2-week national lockdown to crush this second wave. And you and I both know that, yeah, when they announce it's going to run for only
2 weeks, yeah. 2 weeks, guys.
This is, sorry for UK people, but
as nice knowing you.
Yeah, as I wrote last
we
week.
We can feel your pain.
Yeah, the UK is following the Melbourne model to a second lockdown. And the UK lockdown, that was pretty insane as well, with the police patrolling apartment complexes to check that people were socially distancing in their apartments, and also telling people off for being alone in their front yard on their private property.
Yeah, that's right. We can expect more of that. The UK is very well known as a police state, so they seem to have it all up and running.
Yeah, and they also used to raid people's homes and arrest and charge them for social media posts well before Victoria.
Absolutely. We've just been told by Dr. Foster, just as a comment rather than a question, before you go, everyone, be aware that the latest Joe Rogan podcast is with Douglas Murray. Be sure to watch that after this. So if you are a fan of Douglas Murray or Joe Rogan, there is something for you to watch.
I must say I'm not a fan of Joe Rogan. And with his Spotify move for the money, some of the more controversial episodes have mysteriously disappeared.
That's right.
Yeah. We'd never do something like that.
Yeah. And yes, I've been asked as well, courts or updates and so on. I have made an ombudsman complaint against the Minister of Police, Stuart Nash, a while ago for, not responding appropriately to my Official Information Act request on my case. And that's actually now being referred to the Privacy Commissioner. So we're slowly making some progress there. No particular updates, and I also people asking about updates on my court cases. We have officially concluded the initial discovery from the police, so they've actually sent me all of the information that I demanded from them back in January via the Privacy Act that I'm entitled to have. It just took 8 months of court action to get it. There's some very interesting stuff on there, but I will be releasing a full update, a written update when I can. And there's a lot of the evidence that, has to first be presented in court before I can talk about it, but it's all good stuff, and it shows the political motivations behind what was done to me. As you said last week, imagine my shock. But that's the case it has been. So thank you to all of those as well who have supported me in many different ways on this court case. And throughout this year, 2020 has definitely been and continues to be quite a bizarre year.
Yeah, you can say that again. And now the media is now turning to, is Australia's bushfire season going to be as bad as last season's Black Summer? And are we going to have to deal with two catastrophes? And there's also been talk about COVID-safe firefighting. And of course, I think you're allowed to leave your home if it's on fire.
Well, yeah. Are you sure? We'll have to get that one tested in court after somebody dies.
Yeah. But given how much
will you die of coronavirus if you're killed in a bushfire, if you're staying under lockdown?
Although you do cough because of smoke, that could be, they might think you have coronavirus. Mm. But given the amount of hectares that were burned in last year's Black Summer, the Black Summer bushfires, they did start in September. They haven't started at the moment. So I doubt we might have some bushfires, but I don't think it will be as bad as last year. But
the thing is, theoretically anyway, if the Greens are stopping you from clearing bush, back burning, if you get a really good fire 1 year, the regrowth shouldn't have been enough to cause an equally bad fire the next year. That's the theory. So we'll get, put that to the test, I suppose.
California at the moment is going through its own black summer, so as Oregon and Washington. They, of course, saying it's due to climate change, though there is a lot of evidence that some are being deliberately lit by Antifa and Black Lives Matter supporters. And as I said on the Uncrackables last night, the correlation between the wildfires in California and them making it easier for adults to commit sodomy against minors.
Yes, I have just been looking at the Babylon Bee headline on this earlier today, and I've got it open here. State that just voted to reduce penalties for pedophiles, not sure why God keeps lighting them on fire. And that is all that needs to be said about the wildfires in California.
Anita McGuire in the Unshackled chat has said both Rogan and Shapiro have moved out of California suddenly. Sounds like a good idea.
Yes.
So thank you everyone tonight in the live chats and to our super chatter and questioners. We'll of course be back again next Friday night. Well, you'll be back because you still can't campaign. Because of...
That's right. We have an update on Monday, and possibly we'll be able to have more than 10 people on by end of next week. But the interesting thing is events that had previously been rescheduled later in the month for me have all been cancelled. So people are just saying, look, I'm not going to bother anymore. Because of the uncertainty, everything's cancelled because there's no point planning and then replanning and then having the rope tugged, you know, the carpet tugged from under you. So basically no political events for the next month until the election.
And I mentioned about Australia's Powerball last night. Tomorrow morning will, of course, be Victoria's daily COVID lotto numbers. What are going to be the new case numbers, the new daily deaths, the testing numbers? That's what it's been referred to now, because there is no predictor about what it's going to be.
And we stopped paying attention here in New Zealand because it turns out it doesn't really matter. You get
lockdown. Yeah.
So. Nobody even knows what the case numbers are. Yeah. I had to look them up 5 minutes before the show.
Yeah. it matters. A lot of people can't get on with their day in Melbourne unless they know what the COVID numbers is. And as with Powerball, if you hit the COVID lotto jackpot, grand prize is a ticket to anywhere else.
Very good. Well, everyone, that's all for us. Good good night and stay free. And also stay safe from the escaped criminals running around Auckland.
Yeah, I'm not allowed to say stay free. I'm only allowed to say stay sane and stay happy. All right. Good night, everybody.
Good night. Thank you, everyone, for watching.